Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 518, Islamism in Europe, being recorded on July 17th of the year 2005. Again, as I said on side one, at the end of this side, I'm going to take some time to discuss other resources. A growing number of resources, both printed and audio, are available to For the Record listeners online. More about that at the end of the broadcast. Now, in wake of a number of questions that are being asked about Muslim communities in Europe, this in the wake of the subway attacks in Europe, we are in the middle of reading an article, part of a series in the Wall Street Journal about Islam in Europe, and specifically about European Islamists. This past Tuesday, July 12th, there was a very important, albeit flawed, article that appeared as the lead story in the Wall Street Journal. That article is by Ian Johnson. It begins on the front page of Tuesday's Wall Street Journal. It's titled, How a Mosque for Ex-Nazis Became Center of Radical Islam. We've been reading this article, and although there are some significant omissions, for example, there's no discussion of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, no mention whatsoever of the Muslim Brotherhood's association with Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy. However, there is a very good and deep presentation of the continuity of radical Islam from the Islamic Waffen SS divisions of Nazi Germany and other Islamic fighting forces for Nazi Germany, all the way on up through the Cold War, where many of these elements received the stewardship of both German intelligence and related elements, as well as the CIA. We've spoken about some of these Turkic Islamist elements, having worked with the former World Anti-Communist League and similar organizations such as the Promethean League in the 1920s and 30s, that in, among other shows, RFA 14. And again, although this article has some significant omissions, at the same time, I think that for our purposes in understanding the evolution of these forces, and in particular for listeners to For the Record who wonder, you know, why am I talking about the Underground Reich in connection with Islam, this details some of that history and some of the continuity of these Islamist elements from the Third Reich on up to Western intelligence during the Cold War. And if then one traces the activities of people like François Genoux and Ahmed Huber and others who've worked with some of these elements, both during the closing phase of the Cold War and afterward, the continuity of the activity of these Islamist elements on behalf of the Third Reich, and then their operations in conjunction with elements of what I call the Underground Reich in the post-war period, should become much more clear. One of the points that's important about this article, as I mentioned on side one, is the fact that it points out the rivalries, even during the Cold War, between elements of German intelligence and the BND, the successor to the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit, about which I speak so often, and the CIA. They were allied at a certain level, but also they were in sharp conflict in other areas. And again, note that many of these Islamist fascist elements allied with Nazi Germany were associated with the Gehlen organization and other institutions that co-opted much of the Ostministerium that had employed Gerhard von Mende. A Baltic German Gerhard von Mende worked with the Ostministerium in World War II and then proceeded to steward a lot of these elements in post-war, politically steward a lot of these elements in post-war Germany. And one of the things we're going to talk about now is the concretization of the project in Munich to build the Munich Islamic Center. That Munich mosque has become an epicenter of radical Islam, and it has a Nazi and fascist history. Some of the names here. Mr. Gakoglu is a former Nazi soldier, a Muslim who worked for the CIA. A Mr. Namangani is a former imam with a Waffen-SS division. He was seized upon by Mr. Gerhard von Mende in order to counteract what he saw as unwarranted CIA influence among the various Islamic Third Reich alumni working in Germany. At the initial meeting to begin construction of the Munich Mosque, mosque, again one of the epicenters of radical Islam in Europe and elsewhere, and also a spawning ground of many of the people associated with the Bank al-Taqwa, about which we've spoken so often. At that meeting, the initial 1958 meeting to begin the funding of the construction of the Munich Mosque, Gerhard von Mende noted the presence of Saeed Ramadan. Saeed Ramadan was not only there working with Western intelligence, Saeed Ramadan was the son-in-law of Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, and Saeed Ramadan had specifically, as we've looked at in, for the records, 343 and 456, among others, had seized upon Munich as a Muslim Brotherhood mustering point, so to speak, precisely because of the World War II relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Third Reich. So it is at this point, it's the post-1958 meeting, and Gerhard von Mende has noted the presence at this mosque launching, so to speak, of Saeed Ramadan, and as we're going to see, he took great alarm at Saeed Ramadan's long association with Western intelligence and the CIA. In particular, one of the things we've looked at concerns Saeed Ramadan's activities in the United States in the 1970s, where, as we saw in For the Record 381, he successfully recruited an African-American named David Belfield, who converted to Islam, changed his name, and then became an assassin working on behalf of the Khomeini forces in Iran. As we deal with discussion of the Muslim Brotherhood in here, we should never forget that although it is mostly affiliated with Sunni Islam, that the Bank al-Taqwa in particular, and people like Ahmed Huber, and also Huber's mentor, one of his mentors, for the late François Janoux, they had very strong connections to Ayatollah Khomeini and the radical Islamic forces in control of Iran as well. So the Bank al-Taqwa, the Muslim Brotherhood financial institution, basically bridges the gap between Sunni and Shia. And as we've seen in many discussions about the events in and around September 11th, one of the things that appears to be taking place is the use of some of these Muslim peoples of what the Nazis called the Earth Island as proxy warriors against the U.S. and Britain and Israel. So we're going to return now to the Wall Street Journal of Tuesday, July 12th of 2005, article by Ian Johnson, How a Mosque for Ex-Nazis Became Center of Radical Islam. We're going to skip down to roughly the middle of the article, and this is after Saeed Ramadan has been detected by Gerhard von Mende, former Third Reich manager of many of these Muslims. And as we're going to see, Saeed Ramadan was working with U.S. intelligence, something that was very alarming to Gerhard von Mende. In a section of the Ian Johnson article called The Brotherhood Arrives, we read the following. Saeed Ramadan's arrival in Europe was the result of a clash of ideas that continues to tear at Islamic societies. At heart, the problem is how to reconcile Islam with the modern nation-state. Like many religions, Islam is all-embracing, prescribing behavior in many spheres, politics included. But when taken literally, these requirements can clash with today's liberal democracies which promote individual freedom. In 1920s Egypt, a young school teacher named Hassan al-Banna came down firmly on the side of orthodoxy. Troubled by what he saw as the immorality of a rapidly modernizing Egypt, he set up an organization called the Muslim Brotherhood. His plan was to re-Islamize society by teaching the fundamentals of Islam in the everyday language of the coffee shop, not the classical Arabic of mosques. He set up welfare organizations and was famous for his commitment to social justice. But this collided with other visions of Egypt, especially those imported from the West, such as socialism and fascism. Heavily involved in the turbulent politics of post-war Egypt, Mr. Banna was assassinated in 1949. A few years later, a military coup brought in a socialist government that banned the group in 1954. Parenthetically, I would add that this is the government of Nasser, and it was not really a socialist government. The Nasser government was sort of a strange admixture of Stalinist socialism and Nazi fascism, and because it was a secular society, it ultimately turned on the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood had actively supported the young officers' coup in Egypt, and it was that officer's coup that incorporated many Third Reich alumni and that ultimately brought Nasser to power. But because Nasser was a secularist, he opposed the theocratic stance of the Muslim Brotherhood. But the Muslim Brotherhood was and is fascist. continuing, of Nasser's suppression of the Muslim Brotherhood, many members were thrown in jail and some were executed. Mr. Ramadan was the most prominent member to flee abroad. He was Mr. Bana's son-in-law and was famous for having helped organize Jerusalem's defense against the new state of Israel in 1948. Few countries in the region wanted to shield Mr. Ramadan. Egypt was a regional powerhouse, and its neighbors were wary of antagonizing it. After stops in Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and Pakistan, he arrived in Geneva in the summer of 1958 on a Jordanian diplomatic pass accredited to the UN and also neighboring West Germany. While in Germany, he set out his ideas in a doctoral thesis called Islamic Law, Its Scope and Equity, unquote. It was published as a book and became a classic of modern Islamist thinking. He was decent and intelligent, unquote, says his doctoral advisor at Cologne University, Gerhard Kegel, now 93, if a little fanatical. Not fanatical in the sense of advocating violence, Mr. Kegel says, but in his view of a world in which Islam guides all laws and there is no distinction between religion and state. Mr. Ramadan also published a magazine, Al-Muslimun, which surveyed events in the Muslim world and criticized secularism. Mr. Ramadan, like others in the Muslim Brotherhood, strongly opposed communism for rejecting religion. During the Cold War, that made him a natural ally of the U.S., but Mr. Ramadan also opposed the U.S. and other Western countries for their interference in Middle Eastern affairs. Then, as now, that put people like Mr. Ramadan in a tough position. They needed to cooperate with the West, but didn't want to be Western collaborators. Historical evidence suggests that Mr. Ramadan worked with the CIA. At the time, America was locked in a power struggle with the Soviet Union, which was supporting Egypt's Gamal Abdel Nasser. As Nasser's enemy, the Brotherhood seemed like a good ally for the U.S. A document from the German Foreign Intelligence Service, known by its initials BND, says the U.S. had helped persuade Jordan to issue Mr. Ramadan a passport and that, quote, his expenditures are financed by the American side, unquote. Swiss diplomats concurred that the U.S. and Mr. Ramadan were close. According to a 1967 diplomatic report in the Swiss Federal Archives, quote, Saeed Ramadan is, among others, an information agent of the British and Americans, unquote. When the Swiss newspaper Le Temps reported the contents of the diplomatic report last year, the Ramadan family responded in a letter to the editor that read in part, our father never collaborated with American or English intelligence services. He was, on the contrary, the subject of permanent surveillance for numerous years, unquote. Members of the Ramadan family refused to comment. They include two sons, the popular Muslim intellectual Tariq and his brother Hani, who heads an Islamic center in Geneva that his father set up. Although he was fortunate to have escaped the Middle East, Mr. Ramadan's Swiss exile cut him off from his base of support. He began to look around for allies, according to colleagues who knew him. Soon, an opportunity presented itself. He was contacted in 1958 by some Arab students in Munich eager to build a new mosque. The students had come to Germany to study medicine, engineering, and other disciplines in which German education excelled. Many had been involved with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and were also using the chance to escape persecution. Mr. Ramadan, quote, was a gifted orator and we all respected him, unquote, says Mohammed Ali El Magari, who now heads an organization affiliated with the Munich Mosque, the Islamic Center of Nuremberg. The students quickly united in wanting to get rid of Mr. Naaman Ghani, the former SS imam. Fired up by Muslim Brotherhood ideology, they saw the Uzbek as a throwback to an earlier era, one where, for example, local traditions allowed for drinking alcohol when this was expressly forbidden in the Quran. Over the next 3 years, Mr. Ramadan and the Brotherhood showed their political mettle, first sidelining the soldiers and their German allies, then striking out on their own. First, Mr. Ramadan teamed up with AMCOM-Lib to undermine Mr. Naaman Ghani. In 1959, he organized the European Muslim Congress in Munich, which Mr. Mende's informants reported was co-financed by AMCOM-Lib, according to German Foreign Ministry archives and Mr. von Mende's personal letters. The goal? Marginalize Mr. Naaman Ghani by making Munich's mosque a European-wide center, not just for Munich's Muslims. For the U.S., this would help strengthen their man, Mr. Gökoğlu, and limit the West Germans' influence over the emigre. In 1960, Mr. Ramadan took formal control of the mosque's construction commission, with the students convincing the former soldiers that only Mr. Ramadan could raise the money needed for a mosque, according to interviews. Mr. Ramadan was elected chairman, and Mr. Namangani relegated to deputy. Flummoxed, Mr. Fonmenda tried to figure out what Mr. Ramadan's goals were. His reports show that he was convinced that Mr. Ramadan was working with the U.S., but he needed confirmation and so turned to Germany's Foreign Intelligence Service. Parenthetically, that's the BND, again, the successor organization to the Gehlen outfit. Continuing, in a private letter to a former colleague in the Ostministerium, Mr. Fonmenda asked for information on Mr. Ramadan and suggested stealing files from his office in Geneva. He even estimated how much the operation would cost, bribes and travel costs included. Mr. Fonmenda's BND contact confirmed that Mr. Ramadan was backed by the U.S. As for stealing his files, the colleague advised against it. Mr. Ramadan was, quote, much too careful, unquote, to leave valuable information in them. Adding to Mr. Fonmenda's worries was that the CIA was now openly backing Mr. Ramadan. In May of 1961, a CIA agent attached to AMCOM Lib in Munich, Robert Dreyer, brought Mr. Ramadan to Mr. Fonmenda's office in Dusseldorf for a meeting to propose a joint propaganda effort against the Soviet Union, according to Mr. Fonmenda's personal papers and interviews with contemporaries of both men. Mr. Fonmenda quickly turned them down. Mr. Fonmenda decided he had to use Mr. Namangani to engineer Mr. Ramadan's removal. At first, it appeared the two had succeeded. In late 1961, Mr. Namangani called a meeting of the mosque commission. Mr. Ramadan was accused of financial irregularities. The soldiers put forward a new candidate and, in a close vote, won a simple majority. In memos to each other, German officials crowed that Mr. Ramadan was gone and with him the plans for a, quote, monumental mosque, unquote. But a sharp-eyed city government official noted that the commission's bylaws had required that Mr. Namangani's candidate win a two-thirds majority. The simple majority hadn't been enough. Once again, Mr. Ramadan's ability to mobilize had been decisive. His students had turned out in force, unlike Mr. Namangani's more numerous soldiers. Mr. Ramadan was still in charge of the mosque commission. Discouraged, the soldiers began to leave the commission. By the way, soldiers here refers to the Muslims who had fought in various Nazi fighting formations during World War II. Continuing. Discouraged, the soldiers began to leave the commission. Mr. Namangani remained head of the West German organization that oversaw the former soldiers' spiritual needs, but had nothing to do with the mosque. In a 7-page letter to German officials that is now in the Bavarian State Archives, Mr. Namangani explained he was tired of fighting Mr. Ramadan. The Mosque Construction Commission has drifted far from its original goal, and there is the danger that it will become a center for those engaged in politics, unquote, he wrote. The emigres' departure from the Mosque Commission slowed its progress but didn't hurt it. The German bureaucracy, packed with many former Nazis, was still sympathetic to the idea of building a mosque, memos among officials show. They apparently didn't know that their former comrades in arms had left the commission. The West German bureaucracy even gave the mosque project, now firmly under Muslim Brotherhood control, tax-exempt status, which would be worth millions over the next decades. Mr. Fonmenda, though, realized that his Turks were left in the political wilderness. In memos to the German Foreign Ministry, he said the federal government must do everything possible to block Mr. Ramadan, whom he saw as a foreign-backed outsider. Whether Mr. Fonmenda could have stopped Mr. Ramadan is unknown. In December of 1963, while sitting at his desk in Dusseldorf, Mr. Fonmenda had a massive heart attack and died immediately. He was 58 years old. A few months later, his Eastern European Research Service was closed, and Mr. Fonmenda's network of informants dried up. It would only be decades later, after the September 11, 2001 attacks on the U.S., that Germany would seriously focus domestic intelligence on the Brotherhood's Munich operations. Cloaked from outside scrutiny, the mosque had less and less to do with the needs of Munich's Muslims. And around this time, evidence of the CIA's involvement dried up. Instead, control eventually passed to an unlikely location, Campione d'Italia, a swath of mansions and millionaires in the Swiss Alps. Here, From a terraced villa overlooking Lake Lugano, one of Mr. Ramadan's trusted lieutenants, Galeb Himat, ran the Munich mosque and influenced the network that grew out of it. As we're going to see, as we have seen, I should say, in past shows, Ali Galeb Himat, one of the principals with Bank al-Taqwa, and along with Bank al-Taqwa's founder, Youssef Nada, himself a former German intelligence agent, Himat and Nada sired six kids in the United States between 1979 and 1984. I would be willing to bet that their presence in the U.S., specifically in the Washington Beltway area, was in conjunction with the anti-Soviet Mujahideen effort, which was underway at that time. But here, once again, control of the Munich Mosque is passing to the Bank al-Taqwa. Continuing with the article, of all the characters in the mosque's history, Mr. Himat is the most enigmatic, although he's one of the few still alive. A Syrian, he went to Munich in the 1950s to study, but ended up amassing wealth as a merchant. Now under investigation by several countries for links to terrorism, he normally shuns publicity. He agreed to comment briefly on the telephone for this article. Contemporaries and archival records indicate that Mr. Himat was a driving force behind the mosque. In 1958, members of the mosque commission say he led the movement to invite Mr. Ramadan to Munich. Documents show that the two worked closely together. They went on fundraising trips abroad, and Mr. Himat stood in for Mr. Ramadan when the older man was back in Geneva. Mr. von Mende's death should have left Mr. Ramadan firmly in charge of the project, but over the next few years, he lost control to Mr. Himat. The exact nature of their split isn't clear, but close associates say it had to do with their different nationalities. Mr. Himat denies this, saying he does not know why Mr. Ramadan left. At the same time, Mr. Ramadan was losing the support of his Saudi backers. Short of money, he stopped publishing his magazine in 1967. Over the last quarter century until his death in 1995, Mr. Ramadan's influence waned. His son Tariq describes him in a book as prone to, quote, long silences sunk in memory and thoughts and often in bitterness, unquote. Mr. Himat assumed control of the mosque just before it opened in August of 1973. Under his leadership, the mosque grew in importance, functioning as the Muslim Brotherhood's de facto European embassy. As its influence grew, its name changed. From Mosque Construction Commission, the group became the Islamic Community of Southern Germany, and today, the Islamic Community of Germany. It is now one of the country's most important Islamic organizations, representing 60 mosques and Islamic centers nationwide. The group also became a cornerstone in a network of organizations that have promoted across Europe the Muslim Brotherhood way of thinking. The Islamic Community of Germany, for example, helped found the UK-based Federation of Islamic Organizations in Europe, which unites groups close to the Muslim Brotherhood and lobbies the European Union. Mr. Himat says the mosques had always been open to all Muslims, but that the Brotherhood came to dominate it because its members are the most active. Quote, if the Muslim Brotherhood considers me one of them, it is an honor for me, Mr. Himat said in the telephone interview. They are nonviolent. They are for interreligious discussion. They are active for freedom, unquote. For decades, German authorities paid little attention to the activities in Munich, viewing them as unconnected to German society. They were slow to grasp the warning signs. In 1993, after a car bomb attack on the World Trade Center in New York killed six and injured 1,000, investigators discovered that one of the organizers was Mahmoud Abu Halima, who had frequented the Munich Mosque. He was tried in the U.S. and in 1994 was sentenced to life in prison without parole. German domestic intelligence began to observe the mosque, intelligence officials say, but dropped their efforts after a short while when no links to terrorism appeared. The September 11th attacks changed that. Three of the four lead hijackers had studied in Germany, as did another key organizer. As German and U.S. law enforcement searched for clues, some, it is only now becoming apparent, led back to the Munich Mosque. Mr. Himat, it turned out, was one of the founders of Bank al-Taqwa, a Bahamas-based institution whose shareholder list is a who's who of people associated with the Muslim Brotherhood in Europe. The bank has been identified by investigators in several Western countries as having links to terrorism. Investigators believe the bank helped channel money to the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas and may have transferred money for Al-Qaeda operatives. In 2001, The U.S. issued a list of designated terrorists, unquote, that included Mr. Hamad and a fellow shareholder, Youssef Nada. The Treasury Department froze their U.S. assets. Last month, Swiss authorities dropped their own investigation, citing lack of evidence. The men's money, however, remains frozen, and the U.S. has indicated that it's continuing its investigation. Messrs. Hamad and Nada deny any involvement in terrorism. A longtime member of the Munich Mosque, Mr. Nada said in an interview that he no longer attends it or its board meetings. He said the mosque wasn't a formal headquarters for the Brotherhood because the group is no longer a formal organization. Now, he says, it has become something different, a matrix of ideas. Quote, "There is no form you sign," Mr. Nada said. "We are not an economic and political organization. We are a way of thinking," unquote. The U.S. terror funding investigation was enough to end Mr. Hamad's career at the Islamic Community of Germany. In 2002, he resigned, he said, because by being put on the terrorism watch list, he was no longer able to sign checks for the community, meaning it couldn't pay its staff. He says the organization is doing well on its own, and he doesn't contemplate returning to it. "It's running," he said. "There is no need," unquote. In April, German police raided the mosque, claiming that it was involved with money laundering and spreading intolerant material, a crime in Germany. Police carted off computers and files from the offices. That was one of several raids on the center, although none have resulted in charges. Mosque officials say the organization's days as a focal point of political Islam are over. Quote, "This center has developed from a center that was important in Germany and internationally to a local institution," unquote, says Ahmed von Denfer, a leader of the mosque. The Islamic Community of Germany has since moved its operations to Cologne, where its current president resides. Inside the world of political Islam, though, the Islamic Center of Munich remains something special. Some of the ideology's top leaders have served or spoken there, and the Muslim Brotherhood's current murshid or supreme guide, Mahdi Akef, headed the center. Mr. Akef fondly remembers his time in Munich from 1984 to 87. A short, friendly man with an elfish smile and big glasses, Mr. Akef said the center is now one of several belonging to the Muslim Brotherhood in Europe. During his stay there, he says, visiting statesmen from the Muslim world visited the Munich Mosque to pay respects to the world's most powerful Islamic organization. The mosque was so important that when he was arrested in Egypt in the 1990s on allegations he had tried to form an Islamic political party, one of the charges against him was that he had headed the center. The Muslim Brotherhood is still formally banned in Egypt, but a tiny office in Cairo is tolerated. Sitting on a sofa under a map of the world with Muslim nations colored green, Mr. Akef says the Brotherhood did indeed spread out from Munich to other cities in Germany and Europe. Mr. Akef is a controversial figure who has spoken sympathetically about suicide bombers in Iraq, but he avoids answering questions about terrorism or fundamentalism. Instead, he prefers to talk about the community work the mosque did in Munich, helping to beautify a nearby landfill and plant pines in the mosque grounds. "We made this dump beautiful, and now it's full of trees," he said. "It's one of the most beautiful parts of Germany," unquote. Well, they say beauty is only skin deep or perhaps only minaret deep in this case. In any event, a very important, albeit somewhat flawed, article from the Wall Street Journal the past week. Definitely, though, something that adds to our archive about the Muslim Brotherhood and its evolution through the decades. Again, although we're out of time, do note that the Spitfire website has tons of information, from links to websites maintained by sister station WFMU, featuring the For the Record shows on streaming real audio and MP3, to a podcasting website. You can have the For the Record shows podcast to you, for courtesy of WFMU. Spitfire website features tons of printed information, long article-length descriptions about the For the Record shows, and now those For the Record descriptions are being turned into a blog by a diligent and energetic listener. He's also created a blog for the archive shows as well. There will be links at the top of each For the Record description to those blogs. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record, program number 518, Islamism in Europe, being recorded on July 17th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.